Lord, you are good and your mercies endure forever. We say that you are our rock and our fortress, our God in whom we trust. We've gathered this evening at your invitation. We praise you as the gathering God who brings people together. You've brought us here, and we've come expectant. Our prayer is the prayer of Samuel. Speak, Lord. Your servants are listening. Now may the words of my mouth and the thoughts of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. I have the great privilege of preaching in the evening after everyone has lost an hour of sleep. How many of you got to take a nap today? Anybody? Perfect. Perfect. We're in John chapter 9 tonight. I saw in the bulletin that you're in the Gospel of Mark. Down in Bridport, we're in the Gospel of John. John chapter 9 this evening is where we're going to rest for a few minutes. Just to set the scene, Jesus is in Jerusalem for one of the festivals. And he wants to talk to the people there about something. And in chapter 8, Jesus actually says to them, I'm the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but he will have the light of life. And then he's interrupted by the Pharisees who say, you can't say that. You can't say that about yourself. And there's this whole big interruption where Jesus has said, I'm the light. They said, you can't testify about yourself. There needs to be other witnesses, blah, blah, blah. And there's this big interruption that takes up all of John chapter 8 then until we come. So at the end of chapter 8, Jesus says, I am. Before Abraham was, I am. They take up stones to stone him, and he slips away. So that's the setting. Jesus has just had this confrontation with the Pharisees, who didn't want to hear him say, I am the light of the world, who didn't want to hear him say, before Abraham was, I am. And so he walks away from them, slips away from them, and we pick up in John chapter 9, verse 1. As he went along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Neither this man nor his parents sinned, said Jesus. But this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him. As long as it is day, we must do the works of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world. After saying this, he spit on the ground, made some mud with the saliva, and put it on the man's eyes. Go, he told him, wash in the pool of Siloam. This word means sent. So the man went and washed and came home seeing. His neighbors and those who had formerly seen him begging asked, isn't this the same man who used to sit and beg? Some claimed that he was. Others said, no, he only looks like him. But he himself insisted, I am the man. How then were your eyes opened? They asked. He replied, the man they called Jesus made some mud and put it in my eyes. He told me to go to Siloam and wash. So I went and washed. And then I could see. Where is this man? They asked him. I don't know, he said. They brought to the Pharisees the man who had been blind. Now, the day on which Jesus had made the mud and opened the man's eyes was, of course, a Sabbath. Therefore, the Pharisees also asked him how he had received his sight. He put mud on my eyes, the man replied, and I washed, and now I see. Some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath. But others asked, how can a sinner perform such signs? So they were divided. Then they turned again to the blind man. What have you to say about him? It was your eyes he opened. The man replied, "He is a prophet." They still did not believe that he had been blind and that he'd received his sight until they sent for the man's parents. "Is this your son?" they asked. "Is this the one you say was born blind? How is it that now he can see?" We know he's our son," the parents answered, "and we know he was born blind. But how he can see now or who opened his eyes, we don't know. Ask him. He is of age. He will speak for himself." His parents said this because they were afraid of the Jewish leaders, who already had decided that anyone who acknowledged that Jesus was the Messiah would be put out of the synagogue. That was why his parents said, "He's of age, ask him." A second time, they summoned the man who had been blind. "Give glory to God by telling the truth," they said. "We know this man is a sinner." He replied, "Whether he's a sinner or not, I don't know. One thing I do know, I was blind, but now I see." Then they asked him, "What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?" He answered, "I've told you already, and you don't want to listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciples too?" Then they hurled insults at him and said, "You are this fellow's disciples. We are disciples of Moses. We know that God spoke to Moses, but as for this fellow, we don't even know where he comes from." The man answered, "Now that is remarkable. You don't know where he comes from, yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners. He listens to the godly person who does his will. Nobody has ever heard of opening the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing." To this they replied, "You were steeped in sin at birth. How dare you lecture us?" And they threw him out. Jesus heard that they had thrown him out. And when he found him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" "Who is he, sir?" the man asked. "Tell me so that I may believe in him." Jesus said, "You have now seen him. And in fact, he is the one speaking to you." Then the man said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. Jesus said, "For judgment I have come into this world, so that the blind will see, and those who see will become blind." Some Pharisees who were with him heard him say this and said, "What? Are we blind too?" Jesus said, "If you were blind, you would not be guilty of sin. But now that you claim you can see, your guilt remains." This is one of my favorite stories in the Gospels. It has everything. It's got humor. It's got conflict. I think John means us to laugh and to cry and to get mad and to be frustrated and to wonder. It's all wrapped up in this story. There's so much to share here, but I hope you can just grab a couple things. I hope we can grab a couple things together to take with us into this week. In his congregational prayer, Philip referenced the fact that things happen in our lives and we ask why. And that's how this story starts. Jesus had been wanting to talk about the fact that he was the light of the world. He got interrupted. People didn't want to hear him say that. And so he said, I'll give them an object lesson. I'll go find a blind man. And he finds a blind man, a man who's been blind since the time he was born. And the disciples immediately ask him why. Why is this man blind? What did he sin or did his parents sin that God would send this judgment of blindness on this man? Why did this happen? That's a natural question for us to ask. Things happen in our lives. We suffer losses. We have conflicts. There are deaths. There's illnesses. There are things that we don't understand, and we say, why? Why is this happening? Why did you do this? A natural question for us to ask, a normal question for us to ask. We want answers. When we're in pain, we have this conflict within ourselves where we want answers and yet we don't want empty words. What we want is someone who can empathize with us, someone who can weep with us, someone who can come alongside us and understand us and be present with us. Often when we're seeking answers, what we really need is presence. And often when we turn to God, we're looking, saying why, and we're looking for answers. What we really need is not an answer, but what we really need is simply the presence of our God with us and the assurance of God's presence and to open ourselves to God's presence. And so the disciples say, why did God do this to this man? Was it his parents' fault or was it his own fault? And Jesus quickly dismisses the idea that this blindness can be attributed to his father. He says, it wasn't because anybody sinned, but if you'll watch, you're going to see the glory of God even in the middle of this tragedy, even in the middle of this loss. If we had time, we could have kept reading. I know you thought reading all of chapter 9 was a lot, but the story continues into chapter 10, but I didn't go there. But if we had, we would find out that later Jesus says that there's a thief who comes to steal and kill and destroy, but he comes to bring life. It's not the work of the Father to steal and kill and destroy. It's the work of the thief. It's the work of the enemy. We need to be careful, and Jesus was wanting to point out to his disciples, I think, that sometimes we slander God the Father. Sometimes we slander God in attributing to God things that God didn't do. We sometimes attribute the works of the enemy to God. Not without any malice, but just out of our confusion. John told us at the very beginning of his gospel that no one had ever seen God. There was only one person who had ever seen God. He was the one who was close to God's heart, and he had come to reveal God to us. That's in chapter 1. So Jesus' mission was to reveal God to us. So as we look at Jesus, we see the Father. If we want to know what God is like, we look at Jesus. And so as we look at the story of Jesus, we discover that Jesus never made anyone blind. Have you noticed that as you've read through the Gospels? Jesus never made anyone blind. But he healed a great number of blind people, didn't he? Jesus never gave anyone leprosy, but he healed a lot of lepers. Jesus never put anyone to death, but he did raise people from the dead. Jesus never sent any storms, but he walked into storms and through storms and sometimes stilled storms. Jesus never made anyone hungry, but he did feed the hungry. And we're intended to look at Jesus and to know that he's revealing God to us. So the disciples ask, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was cursed by God with this blindness? And Jesus said, no, let's not go there at all. Don't lay this at the feet of my Father. Watch and see what my Father feels about this situation. This is so that the glory of God can be revealed. So then Jesus does an interesting thing. He spits in the dirt and makes mud and puts it on the man's eyes. This man didn't ask to be healed. We don't have any indication that this man had any faith at this point that he would be healed. He may not have even known that Jesus was standing there, and we find out later that he doesn't know who Jesus is. So in spite of this man's lack of asking, lack of faith, lack of any knowledge of Jesus, Jesus in his mercy and grace comes to this man and puts mud in his eye. Let me bless you with a mud pack in your eye. Now go to the pool called Siloam, which John parenthetically tells us means sent. I'm sending you. Now go to be sent. And the man goes and washes, and lo and behold, he can see. John calls these miracles in his gospel, he refers to them as signs. We've been looking at signs, these signs down in Bridport. This is the sixth of seven signs in the Gospel of John. How many of you have ever seen a sign? As I drove up from Bridport, I saw a lot of signs. The thing about signs is the sign isn't the important thing. The sign is meant to convey something. It's giving us some information. It's revealing something to us. It's pointing us to something. It's not just about the sign. I saw a large sign and printed on it. It was a big, bold, yellow sign and printed on it in big black letters. It said, "Danger, this sign has sharp edges." That's all it said. "Danger, this sign has sharp edges." That's kind of ridiculous. The sign is about itself. Just take the sign down and then you don't have to worry about the sharp edges. Signs are not supposed to be about themselves. Signs are supposed to point somewhere else. And so here's this sign that Jesus performs. It's a sign meant to point to something else. The signs are meant to reveal God, and the signs, we find out the end of John's gospel, are meant to stir up faith in us. The signs are kind of like a plow, plowing up our hearts so that faith can grow. So here's this sign that happens. You may have noticed that there were 41 verses that I read in John chapter 9. The sign only occupied a few of those verses. By the time we get to verse 7, the sign's over. And the whole rest of the chapter is about how people respond to the sign. The sign is telling us that Jesus is the light of the world and that by Jesus we can see. If we want to have clarity, if we want to have understanding, if we want to see things, if we want to know, Jesus is the light by whom we see and know and understand. In this story, we have a number of people who didn't want to see or know or understand. They had a sign, but they didn't want to see the sign. Near my home in Bridport, there is a stop sign that is in kind of an odd place. There's no traffic that comes by there very much, particularly early in the morning or late in the night. And yet the sign stands there and says, "Stop." There have been a number of times that I didn't want to see that sign. The sign was interfering with what I wanted to do. True confessions, there have been times that as I approached the sign, I glanced around quickly and ignored it and just drove right through because the sign was inconvenient and because I had already decided that I didn't want to obey it. I didn't want to acknowledge it. I wonder if you've ever seen signs that you wanted to try and explain away, that you wanted to not see. You wished I hadn't seen that sign. Maybe the sign, we want to make the signs to be kind of ambiguous. We don't want it to be clear. We want to be able to talk our way out of the sign. Have any of you ever been to Kingsland Bay State Park? When you go to Kingsland Bay, there's a sign that says the park closes at dusk. Dusk? Like, when is dusk? That's kind of, it's kind of gray, isn't it? You can't really hold me to that very well. Your dusk may be different from my dusk. And so if I'm having a good time and I'm looking and it's, I can say, it's not really dusk. We see signs sometimes that we don't want to acknowledge because we've already made up our minds about what we want to do. And John points out here that the Pharisees had already decided that anyone who believes in Jesus is going to be tossed out of the synagogue. They've already decided that they don't want to see this sign. And so there's this whole rigmarole with the blind man. Were you really blind? This can't even be a sign. This didn't happen. You were never blind to begin with. But the evidence gets stacked up and stacked up. Okay, we have to admit he was blind, but we don't have to admit that Jesus healed him. But the evidence stacks up that it was Jesus. Well, we don't have to admit that Jesus did it by the power of God. He's some conjurer, some evil person going around, this evil man going around healing people and making the blind to see how he's so evil that he would do things like that. Stubbornly refusing the light of Christ, stubbornly refusing to see the sign that God was presenting to them. While all the time insisting in their religious pride that they were the gatekeepers, they were the holders of truth, they were the ones who had perfect understanding. And it's out of this pride and self-will that they're unable, unwilling to acknowledge the light that's come to them. And even at the end of this story, they can't admit, as Jesus talks about the blind seeing and the ones who claim that they see are actually the blind ones. What, us? You couldn't be talking about us. We're the ones who have all the rules down. We're the ones who are perfect in our practice. You certainly couldn't mean we're the blind ones. We've already figured out how God works and what God does and doesn't do and how God acts and doesn't act and who God sends and who God doesn't send. We've got all the answers. We've got all the solutions. We've got it all nailed. You couldn't mean that we're the blind ones. Could you, Jesus? Could you? So I've been pondering all this week. What is the light that Jesus is wanting to bring to me that I've been willfully not seeing? What parts of my life has Jesus been wanting to illuminate and I've been willfully saying, no, I can't see that. Where has Jesus been wanting to bring his truth, his holiness, his love, his mercy, his grace to me, but I've been unwilling to acknowledge it? When Jesus heals this blind man, suddenly the blind man can see, and I've got to believe he could see everything. He didn't have partial sight, that he could only see the colors green and red, or he could only see people but not dogs, or some kind of, he could only see people that he liked and not people he didn't. He had sight and he could see. And that light came into every part of his life. I wonder if there might be parts of your life or parts of my life where I don't want God's light. Where I want to say, well, God doesn't really have anything to do with this. I'll accept the light here, but it doesn't have anything to do with the way I work or the way I treat my coworkers or my employees or my employer. There's no sign here. There's no light here. In this room, fill it with light. I'm ready to receive all the light that you have. But at home with my spouse, I don't need any light there. Thank you very much. I know what to do. And I stubbornly, willfully stay in the darkness, claiming I can see, and yet I'm blind. Can I admit that I'm blind? Is the first question. And then the second question is, if I can admit I'm blind, then what do I do about it? If I had lived 2,000 years ago in the land of Palestine and I was blind, I would try to find Jesus. And I've come to believe that in the year 2018, if I live in Addison County and I discover that I'm blind, I probably ought to go to Jesus. And so this evening, I want to invite you to think in two directions. First of all, to think about the fact that our Father is kind and loving, full of grace and mercy, calming storms, not starting storms, healing the blind, not making people blind, raising the dead, not putting people to death, feeding the hungry, not making people hungry. Can we open our hearts to this God revealed to us in Jesus and to see him as a Father full of love and mercy and grace? And secondly, I want to encourage you to think about the fact, or think about the areas in your life where perhaps you've been resisting the light of Jesus. Are there places in your life where you've not wanted the light of Christ to illuminate? Are there places where you're willfully staying in darkness because you've already decided, this is what I want to do? This is how I want to believe. This is how I want to conduct my life. And I don't want to be disturbed by any revelation or any illumination from this man, Jesus, that I don't even know where he came from.